Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Stand-up comic and actor Judah Friedlander is bringing his Future President tour to Massmocha's High Mud Comedy Festival in North Adams, Massachusetts. His recent material, including his Netflix comedy film, America is the Greatest Country in the United States, presents a satirical take on American exceptionalism and his presidential platform should he be chosen slash forced to become U.S. president.
Who thinks climate change is real? Who thinks it's man-made? Well, that's where you're wrong. Think about it. Think about it. Temperatures are going up, glaciers are melting, sea levels are rising. Why? Fish are trying to take over the planet. Earth has always been 71% water, now fish want the whole f***ing thing. Eat as much sushi as you can.
Friedlander played Frank Rossitano in the NBC comedy series 30 Rock and became well known for his dry delivery and his trucker hats. He also had a memorable arc as a musician named Gordy on the Netflix series The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. He's the author of How to Beat Up Anybody, an instructional and inspirational karate book by the world champion, and If the Raindrops United, Drawings and Cartoons. Once again, he'll perform at Massmocha's High Mud Comedy Festival on March 29th, and he joins us now. Judah Friedlander, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me at this Roundtable.
You're welcome. Your Netflix special documentary stand-up is called America is the Greatest Country in the United States. This tour is called the Future President Tour, but I understand it is not the same material as what is available on Netflix that was put up a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's all different material, all new stuff.
How long have you been working on the new stuff, and what is it sort of about?
Well, you know, it's if you've seen my stand-up performance film on Netflix, or I mean right away, you notice it's much different than the other specials out there. First of all, it's in black and white. And it's filmed in just a very different kind of a way. And then even content-wise and stylistically, it's much different. You know, it's all extremely funny. It's all lots of one-liners. It's lots of crowd work. And it really captures the feel of being there live at a show. And it's all, for the most part, satire on all the big human rights issues that we have and how our country deals with those human rights issues. So it's a satire on American exceptionalism as well as our domestic and foreign policy. My new show that I'm doing now is thematically similar, but it's all different material. You know, I invite a little bit of chaos into my show, and I invite the audience to ask me questions about my presidential platform. And so, you know, many of the same topics come up, such as, you know, whether it's health care, immigration, climate change, gun control, parental leave from work. So all these issues are issues that we still have. And I come up with more ridiculous satirical jokes on all these things and how our government deals with them and how we as a nation deal with them.
Air conditioning is illegal in Europe. At least in America, we can get a fatal disease and have the dignity of rotting in a perfectly cooled down apartment. Instead of being stuck all healthy and sweaty in Belgium, or as I call it, the Delaware of Europe. No one has been to Delaware. See, no one has been to Delaware. Maybe you drove through it once accidentally, and you were like, what the f*** is this? And then he said, oh, it's the first state? Well, I guess we've made a lot of improvements since then. Let's try to forget this shit ever happened. When I'm president, I'm going to make Puerto Rico the 50th state. I'm demoting Delaware. It's our first state. We've yet to be impressed. Puerto Rico's getting a shot.
So it's all different material, but it's thematically similar.
Is your platform developed on stage when audience members ask you questions, or do you have to think about it and sort of prepare things around the issues off stage?
It's a mix of both. When my stand-up special came out about a year and a half ago, as soon as it came out, I stopped doing all of that material. And when I work, you know, let's say someone, I ask people to ask me questions about my presidential platform. everyone yells out healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I may come up with a joke off the top of my head. And if that joke does well, let's say a show later that week, someone also yells out healthcare, I will do that joke again. And then I will also add a new joke to it. And sometimes it's a new joke I come up with on the spot. Sometimes it's something I've thought of offstage. Sometimes it's both. So something that starts as one line, after several months might be five or six lines, and after even more several months, it might be a full 3 to 5, 6 or 7 minute bit. For me, a stand-up is never anything that's completed. You know, it's not a screenplay, it's not a play, it's not a novel. It's something that's always going. Now, there are certain bits I just stopped doing, such as the ones that were on my current stand-up special. So my act is always, I'm always working on new things. I'm always looking at how I can make things better. And it varies from show to show. You know, I don't go up there with a set list. I don't start my act as, here's sentence number one, and then I finish the show with sentence number 1,000. That's, you know, I don't go from joke one to joke two. That's not how I do my act. And I think, you know, stand-up comedy, it's not about that. It's, you know, a lot of it is about the moment and what's going on right there that night. So no two shows of mine are the same. You know, if you see me do two shows, you're going to probably see some of the same material and then a lot of different stuff. And you'll see some stuff that was created just for that night for that audience. So it's a mix.
Does the audience require any coaxing to begin yelling out questions, or are they primed and ready?
Yeah, it's not complete chaos and a free-for-all.
Right.
And, you know, just a bunch of people screaming stuff.
No.
I kind of run like a mock town hall,
mm-hmm.
and I tell people that, you know, one day, you know, I might have to be president, and does anyone have any questions about my presidential platform, any issues that you care about that you would like me to discuss? And then I sort of open things up. And then I also, you know, just bring up topics of my own and start talking about them as well. You know, the topics range from the most serious to pretty absurd. But it's always a satirical take I do on things. I don't really call my act political. To me, it's satire,
mm-hmm.
and it might be more social commentary, but using satire. It's never preachy. You know, I'm never telling people, what you think is wrong, this is how it should be. I don't do that.
The comedy film, America is the Greatest Country in the United States, as you mentioned, was done very differently from what most people are familiar with, what most comics do with their specials, which is about an hour, start to finish, edited, directed often by someone, and filmed with a professional camera crew. But you did yours totally differently. Could you tell us how you did it and why you did it that way?
Yeah, well, first I'll start with why. I really don't like the way most comedy specials are filmed. They're very fake from the beginning to the end. You know, they usually film two shows. You know, it's advertised as we're filming. They have a huge camera crew there. They usually have a smoke machine. As often the audience is, it isn't just like a regular audience coming to see them. You know, they're sort of
over-attractive.
That, or they just have, you know, professional audience gatherers, and they, you know, they find people to put in the audience. It's almost like the whole thing's like fake, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then they film it in such a generic way. I mean, anyone can direct those. Each of them have the exact same camera angles. It's just, there's nothing artistic or cinematic about it at all, for the most part. So mine was really filmed more of a documentary style. You know, I just filmed real shows. And to me, stand-up comedy is a small venue art form. It's like jazz. It's not meant to be played in arenas and stadiums. You know, it's a small, intimate art form for the most part. So I thought it should be filmed in a small and intimate way, including the types of cameras I used. I used very small cameras. And I used very you know, lots of different camera angles that they don't use on stand-up specials. And sound-wise, it's a much more natural sound that I have. The sound you're hearing is pretty similar to exactly what it sounds like in the room, as opposed to the way they do it. They record sound where they have one audio track that's just the comedian's voice, and they have multiple other audio tracks that are just the audience. And then they go into post-production, and often I think it's someone who, I'm not even sure, but they may not even have been at the recording, and they're doing the mixing and editing and raising the levels of the comedian's voice and the audience's sound. So it's, at the end, you get something that's just very overproduced from every angle and not really natural. So that's why I made it myself. I'm just about ready to do another special or movie, whatever you want to call it, and I will be filming it myself as well and funding it myself. And then after I finish it, I will figure out the best way I can distribute it.
Filming the special or the film the way that you did, there must have been a lot of material to edit down into what is on Netflix.
There was, and I did not even look at all of it. You know, I was pretty much filming every night, and a lot of it, you know, I probably filmed for a year or a year and a half before I kind of figured out what angles work and what sound recording works at the venues. So it was all trial and error trying to figure out, all right, I'm going to make my own stand-up special. How do I do this? So after about a year or so of filming, I kind of figured out, you know, which angles work, and then I would film every night. And then I'm not a very organized person, so I would just write down some notes of like, okay, this set was good, let's look at that set. So, but it took me months to edit, but I didn't even look at all the stuff that I filmed. I probably looked at 30% of the stuff that I filmed. So, the next one I'm going to do, because the last one was really almost like a collage. It's sort of like looking at, like, okay, over this 6-month period of time, what was I doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, you know, the angle I took for it. And I think the next one I'm going to do is, I'm going to film it at an intimate venue again, but I think the next one might just be one show, one night. I'll be using some of the same camera angles, but I've been experimenting around with some different ones as well. So I'm still playing around with filmically how to film it.
About how many nights per year do you go up? Do you perform stand-up?
Oh, every night, pretty much. You know, I traveled yesterday, so I didn't perform yesterday, but I take nights off here and there, or I might take them off sporadically. Like sometimes around the holidays, I'll just take a week off. But generally, I perform 7 nights a week. And when I'm in New York City, you know, I'm usually doing anywhere from 2 to 4 shows a night. And these are shorter shows, though. When I'm in New York City or LA, I'm generally doing, each show I do is about 15 minutes. But I will do usually 2 to 4 a night. But when I'm on tour, on the road, my sets are 60 to 80 minutes, and I'm usually doing one show a night, sometimes two, but I try to keep it to one show. And so I do shows pretty much every night, yeah.
And so what is your schedule sort of like? I'm sure it varies depending on what else you're working on, but you work at night. How late do you typically begin working?
Oh, you mean during the day, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, it depends, you know, because I do a variety of things. Sometimes I have to get up really early, you know, to do radio to promote shows. Sometimes I have to get very early to travel for shows. And then sometimes I might have, I still do some auditioning. I had stopped for years, but I just started auditioning again because I would like to get into some film projects, maybe TV projects again, but stand-up has been my main focus. So it really varies how late I go the night before and what my schedule is the next day. So today I got up at 10, and I was up quite late the night before. you know, and I don't use an agent, so I do all my booking myself. So a lot of times, I mean, you're working on material, but a lot of times it's just, you know, busy work, scheduling and stuff like that, you know. Right now I'm lining up a little bit of a European tour, so I'm working on 5 different countries in a 2 to 3 week period, you know, lining up shows so that schedule-wise, you know, they all fit, and then, you know, working on getting them promoted and then travel, hotels, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of times it's just, it's busy work, you know.
And you set up all that stuff yourself?
Yes.
Is it difficult? It sounds difficult to me.
I don't know if it's difficult, you know, I mean, that's a big word, difficult, you know.
Okay.
It's doable. I mean, I'm extremely unorganized and I'm able to do it, so it's probably not that difficult.
Okay. You've been doing stand-up for a long time, but this special we've been talking about was your first one. You haven't put out an album or a special or a film before now. Is that because you didn't like the way they were done and you had to figure out how you wanted to do it?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. There's probably 3 main reasons. One is I never liked the way Hollywood makes them, basically, for lack of a better, the industry makes them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had offers before over the years, multiple times, and I've turned them down because creatively I don't like how they made them. And then legally I wouldn't like their contracts where they would not only own that performance, they would own all your words. They would own everything that you said. And I'm like, you can't own the text of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, their contracts, I mean, generally most contracts are not artist friendly. Most contracts are designed, whoever is in power, to protect them, and whoever's not in power is to give them a terrible deal. That's how most contracts work. So I would turn them down. And then the other thing was just my own psychological reasons, you know, of always wanting things to be, you know, being too much of a perfectionist, where it might be like, you know, out of a 60-minute set, there might be 10 seconds where you're like, oh, I forgot that one line I wanted to put with that joke. And so you're like, all right, can't use that. To be less of a perfectionist and just get the stuff out there, just put it out. So that was something else that delayed me as well.
We have to go, but I wanted to ask you one more thing before we get off the phone.
Yeah.
You were in a scene in Star Wars, The Force Awakens. What was that like?
Yeah, that was just, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm an old school Star Wars fan, so I'm literally in one scene for half a second in the movie. As a fan, it was just fun to be there on set with, and, you know, see all the special effects creatures and stuff. And the set design, it was cool. It was just fun.
It is a brief appearance, but I did point to the screen, like elbowed my husband and pointed to the screen, and he nodded. I was like, yep, that's Judah Friedlander.
Okay, yeah. I was thrilled to be a part of that, however small it was. I was like, I wanted to do that. It was so much fun.
Judah Friedlander's Future President Tour is coming to the High Mud Comedy Festival at Massamoka in North Adams, Massachusetts, Friday, March 29th, massamoka.org for more information. Judah, thank you very much again for calling in. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks so much. You have a good one there.
Judah Friedlander is bringing his Future President Tour to Massamoka's High Mud Comedy Festival in North Adams, Massachusetts. He'll perform on Friday, March 29th. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.
Netherlands, another question. When a woman in Netherlands gives birth to a baby, how much time is she given off of work and maybe even paid for that time off of work?
1 year.
Women in Netherlands are given a year paid leave after giving birth to a baby. You know how much time women in America are given off of work after they give birth to a baby? 0. And you know why? It's because our women care about the economy. That's why the euro's going down. Number 1.